But I want to cover things out of the Bible. Out of the Bible doesn't mean away from the Bible, opposed to the Bible. It means within the Bible, okay? And you have your Bibles, and you can open up Genesis chapter 6. I start the story of Abraham in a little bit of a review. I cover things that lead up to him. I want you to get a picture of where he is in the world chronology. And by the way, as you already know, I always start with the creation at zero. I don't look forward to whatever year Christ is coming back. As I've said before, your guess is as good as mine. Maybe it's better. Or if I've asked you all to put down on a piece of paper the year you think Christ is going to come, let's see, there's, 30 people here today or so, I'd get 30 different answers. And probably some of you would be, feel like even putting down a figure is breaking God's law. Well, it isn't. You can speculate something like that, but you don't put your life on it. That's the difference. And, you know, back in 1975, when we thought that the world was coming to an end and we were going to go in a place of safety in 72, you guys remember that? Or is that a mile way over your head? You know, we thought that. We thought that in 72, we would have to be fleeing to a place of safety, 3.5 years in the Great Tribulation, but we'd all be protected, and a place of safety was arranged for and all that. In 75, Christ is going to return. Well, we missed it by about 33 years already, and we're counting. It's coming up to 34 very shortly. And we really don't see a lot of signs about the return of Christ. If you are as concerned as I am about the political situation, you wonder what's going to happen to this country in the next presidency and what is going to happen to all the things that are happening in the Al-Qaeda world, in the Muslim world, or really I have to call them the rebel cause of Islam, the fanatical cause of Islam. A lot of people who are willing to give their life in a bomb or an explosion, blow themselves up, and try to get a few of you infidels at the same time, you know. Well, we have to worry about that someday. It may happen right here in the United States. We don't know since 9/11 happened 7 years ago. We haven't had anything happen to this country since. We have a lot of vulnerable things. And here is this Hurricane Ike down there in Texas. That's going to plow right through the major oil fields in Texas. Texas is a very large supplier of refineries, so we have to be very concerned about that as well. And, of course, the food prices, you know, every time the oil prices go up, we read about it, we sense it, we know when we buy gas, right? And when is it going to come down? And you know what happens if food prices go up and everything is in short demand? Well, that's maybe all little signs heading for the Great Tribulation. But, for instance, has anybody ever seen the abomination of desolation stand in the holy place? I don't see any hands going up. Well, that's because it has not happened. Yet we know that's a sign to the very end. Reading Matthew 24, you just see that right there. The abomination of desolate stands up in the holy place. Well, that's not happened. They don't even have any of the Catholic Church's power down in Jerusalem right now. And it's supposed to be happening over in Jerusalem. Wouldn't we be surprised if it turns out to be someplace else? Yeah, I would be. In other words, don't put your life on hold because you think things are going to happen or not going to happen. You just have to continue to do the right thing. Continue to obey God. Continue to serve him. So, if your Bibles are open to Genesis chapter 6, and of course mine isn't, I always ask you to get yours opened, and I have to open mine up here. There we are. I want to read a few verses leading up to the life of Abraham. Now, Abraham was an extremely important character in the Bible, and I suppose we can spend a lot of time on Abraham and never cover everything. In fact, some of the material you're going to see on this outline you have there are some strange things on that page. And I got to tell you that I really don't have a whole lot of proof on some of them, but I am really relying on the sources I mentioned in the very top line. I have Dr. Herman L. Hayes' Compendium of World History, and that was a 2-volume piece, by the way. Most people have glanced at Volume 1. They haven't really read seriously Volume 2. Bullinger, because he had a tremendous Bible, and he gives us a lot of help, a companion Bible. And then Josephus, who wrote the Antiquities of the Jews. And then, of course, we're going to concentrate on Genesis 5 and 11. And 5 and 11 contain all the chronology of all this war or activities and fighting and battles that occurred all the way up, well, probably to Abraham's time. So we start out with Genesis 6, verses 1, 2, and 3. And we're talking about way back in Noah's time. But to understand why I'm covering that, it's because it's foundational material to understand the character of Abraham. It came about that men began to multiply on the face of the land, and daughters were born to them. Verse 2, and the sons of God saw the daughters of men were beautiful. And they took wives of themselves, whomever they chose. In other words, he's implying that God's hand was not in these marriages. At least that's what I get out of it. What they chose, they liked. And they saw whatever and said, okay, that's fine, I'll take it. Remember, everybody's speaking the same language this time. There's no communication problem in the world. And they never had any prejudice in the world at all. You got to remember that Adam and Eve, what did I say when we covered Adam and Eve? They had 56 children, was it? I think it was 56, 33 sons and 23 daughters. That, this is from Josephus, by the way. I'm not, nothing in the Bible about that. They had, Eve had every race under the sun as a child. That has not changed. And I understand, and I have never been able to prove it, that when a woman is born and she has all her eggs there ready to go, when she's born, they don't develop as she grows up. They're there already. And one just will pop out of the fallopian tube, and perhaps when the woman is proper age and all that, and a child will be produced. And Adam and Eve had every color under the sun. And they had no prejudice. We have a lot of prejudice in this world. That's really a sad thing. That won't happen in the time of Christ. He's going to eliminate all that. So if you're worried about it now, don't worry about it when Christ comes back. He'll fix it. The Lord said, my spirit, in verse 3, my spirit shall not strive with men forever, because he is also flesh. Nevertheless, in spite of all this, God says his days shall be 120 years. Now, this is a very patient God who knew that that world was getting very corrupt. You might think, well, yeah, but what about Noah? He must have lived in a righteous world. Uh-uh. He lived in a very unrighteous world. He actually, according to Josephus, had to flee once in his life to save his own life and his kids too. So I want to just mention this critical figure of 120 years. Now, you might think that's a pretty long time. And what happens if in the 120 years you've got one little project? And then you read about that project, verse 13, God said to Noah, the end of flesh shall come before me. Earth is filled with violence because of them. Behold, I'm about to destroy them with the earth. So you make yourself an ark. And we all know about Noah's ark. And I think we've even had some pictures. Did I ever show you the videotape of Noah's ark? Did I? Oh, good. See, I don't remember all these things that I've done in the past. I'm getting a little bit better. I'm really recording these things. I'll make sure I put down that in Bath, Ohio, I covered Abraham. And later on, when I cover Isaac, I'll do the same thing. And Joseph, we're out. Jacob first, then all his sons, and then Joseph. So this is an ongoing project, and this is one of many lectures I'm going to give you. And I'm going to try to keep it down to, was it 55 minutes you wanted me to go? Yeah, so I'm waiting for this guy up here to hold up this big card and tell me I've got 10 minutes left. And that means I've got only an hour left to go. So yeah, I'll try really hard to keep it down to 10 minutes. Chapter 7, verse 11, just covering a couple of spots in Genesis. 600 years of Noah's life, in the second month, in the 17th day of the month, on the same day, all the fountains of the great deep burst open, and the flood gates on the sky were open. You think that you have it bad down there in Galveston and Houston today? You should have seen the world back there in the days of Noah. when the waters, 40 days it rained. And I see this rain out here for 2 days, and that's a pretty big rainfall. What would you do with 40 days of constant rain and the ground, all the groundwater bursting up? The whole land could even, and don't think of the world as having Mount Everest back then. There's no proof of that at all. That probably came as a post-Noah event, post-Noahian event. The mountains growing up to 11,000 plus feet, or whatever Mount Everest is. Surely it must be higher than that. 13,000? 14,000? I don't know what. It's way up there in any case. There's nothing about any high mountains. In fact, in the book of Genesis, the implication is the whole world was watered by dews and fog and mists, and it was a very low-lying land, nothing like it is today. Is that wrong for today? No. We like it. Those of us in Utah love it because we got 11, 12,000 feet mountains and huge snowfalls. And they were skiing back there this year on July 4th. So, you know, it's not an unusual thing to have a wonderful snowfall. Now, we had a pretty good snowfall here last year, if I remember, but I didn't ski any. I gave up skiing a long time ago when I came down the mountains one time up at Park City area. And my knees really bothered me by the time I got to the bottom. I said, that's it. I'm not going to take any more runs. I love skiing, but my legs couldn't take it. And, of course, today they're even worse. What am I going to do? All right, so here we have Noah's flood came in the 600th year of his life. He was 600 years old, but yet he had already been told by God to build an ark, and you got 120 years to do it. So if you subtract 120 years from the 600 when it came, it means he started to build that ark when he was 480 years old. Doesn't that make sense? 120 from 600 is 480. I've never found anybody who says that is not the case. Well, I can't figure out how anybody could come out with any other figure. Unless they say, well, God cut it short. And Noah really started building the ark when he was 527 years old. But he didn't really have 120 years. No, I don't believe that, because God said, I'm going to give man 120 years. If he says he's going to do something, he does it. And God is a precise chronologist. He does things so unusually precise. When you think about the kings of first kings of Israel, Saul and David and Solomon, they all reigned not for 38 years or 42 years. They all reigned for exactly 40 years. Now, how in the world is that possible unless God's hand is in it? And I think about, oh, my, is that going to be an indication of what's going to happen in this world? I don't know. How many years has this nation been alive? If you figured it out, if you take 1776, subtract it from the year we've got today, how many years is that? Take 2008, subtract 1776. I don't know. It's probably about, I don't know. I'd have to figure it out. Did you figure it out? How much?
232.
232 years. That's interesting, 232 years. You know, if you give this nation 8 more years, how many years will that be? 240 years. Now, I'm not saying that God is going to do anything at 240 years, but that just happens to be 6 times 40. A precise number. Man's week is 6 days of labors, followed by a day of rest. And, whoops. That doesn't help this thing any. Are you still picking him up? All right, good. I'll leave it on the table here and be very careful not to bang it again. Please follow me over to chapter 8. If Noah began to build that ark when he was 480 years old, when were his kids born? That's interesting, because the firstborn, the oldest boy, was born when Noah was 500 years old. So when you think about it, wait a minute, you mean he started building that ark by himself? Yeah, and Mrs. Noah. The two of them helped. No children yet, no workmen other than the ones he hired. And when the boys came along, what was their first job? Well, Daddy, what's this gadget? Well, it's a hammer. Well, what do I do with that? Let me show you. What's this gadget? It's a saw. What do you do with that? I'll show you. He taught his children how to build a huge boat. And you know those big logs they were using? Well, if it really was a good quality wood, it was probably oak. I don't know. It doesn't say, but that seemed to be the indication. Things they have found in Noah's Ark. It was built out of oak. And what was it? How was it ballasted and all that? We've covered that already, so I know he covered it again. So he had to teach his boys how to deal with heavy wood, carry it to the boat, drag it to the boat, use animals to haul it to the boat. I don't really know. I think it would be an interesting story to put together, the building of Noah's Ark. And maybe one of these days we might even see it. Who knows? Do you think God's going to warn this world by just a little feeble voice? People don't understand speaking. They don't understand words. They understand emotion more than they understand words. They understand phenomenal facts more than they do words. But what if Noah's Ark were discovered, where we think it is, brought back to the United States, or a piece of it, and paraded around the United States, put in different museums for a show? Would that influence people? You know? No. They could see it and they would say, that's nothing. That's not Noah's Ark. That's a man's imagination. But anyhow, he trained his boys to do a really good job. So chapter 8 and verse 4, did I cover that already? I'm up here to 10 already. I just turned the page too far. Chapter 8, verse 1. I think I covered that one. God remembered Noah and all the beasts of the cattle that were with him in the ark. And God caused a wind to pass over the earth, and the waters subsided. Here is Noah and his three sons, his wife, Mrs. Noah, and the three daughters-in-law. And they were stuck on that boat for over a year, being tossed and turned by tremendous waves, probably bigger than the ones they have down there in Galveston, Houston, right now. And they had to endure all that for over a year. So they were really happy when things began to dry out. I think we'll be happy, too, when in the springtime we appreciate the fact that things are drying out a little bit. It's warming up a little bit. I can understand how the ancient world loved the return of the sun, because it meant so many good things to so many carnal people. Well, that's just my thought on it. I don't know if that's right or not. Verse 14. In the second month, in the 27th day of the month, the earth was dry. Excuse me. So they came out of the ark. And, of course, Noah, a righteous man, sacrificed, did all the right things. His sons came out, and daughters-in-law, they all set up some type of home, some type of a dwelling, and they began to farm the land. Why would they begin to farm? Well, that's how you grow crops. Did they have the seed for it? Well, I would think they were smart enough to bring a little bit of seed aboard. If they didn't, they had some kind of plants aboard. They stuck them in the ground. Now, that's pretty high mountain, up there in the mountains of Ararat. So you've got to move down. Well, what's right down a few miles south of them? Only Iraq, Tigris and Euphrates River. Beautiful, sunny area with tremendous soil and tremendous crop-growing ability. They would have probably migrated down there. Of course, we know they did, and they migrated all the way down into Egypt, because there was only the Nile River down there, only the Nile River. Tremendous amount of mud and deposits were washed down that river every year. So the flow of the Nile River is what really grew the crops, all that water and good stuff coming down. Chapter 9, verse 13. I set my bow on the cloud, and it shall be a sign of a covenant between me and the earth. That is the famous rainbow verse. Do you have rainbows around here? Yeah, we do once in a while. Beautiful rainbows. That's to remind you that this earth never is going to get flooded again. Doesn't remind you that it's not going to get burned to a crisp. Because we know that's what's going to be the ultimate, what's going to happen in this world. And there may be a lot of violence in between, but we're not going to be flooded. So relax, people. This is just a little rainfall. Not going to be flooded. Although I've noticed on Ridge Road, that's that road that runs north and south. I'm not pointing in the right direction because I'm confused when I'm down here. I don't really know which way is north, which east and south. I think, is that west that way? See, I'm just guessing. I'm wrong. In any case, Ridge Road runs north and south, and every once in a while from Boston Road up north, there's a lot of low-lying areas, and they have to close off that road because of the floods. Little areas there just get so much water that the roads are just covered with water, and you can't even pass through it. Well, you can, but you're taking a big chance driving your car because it might be just picked up and lifted up, thrown off the road. So that's just what we have to learn how to live through. Verses 28 and 29, Noah lived 350 years after the flood. So the days of Noah were 950 years and he died. So he lived 350 years, and the interesting thing about Noah's life, as I said before, he had no more children other than the first three, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. No more daughters. And you know, in those years of the history of this world, people had huge families. To only have three sons is really a rarity. And he had his first son, and I guess he waited a long time. Maybe Mrs. Noah couldn't conceive. I'm just guessing. Of course I don't know what happened. He lived 500 years before he had his first son. His second son, Ham, was born. His third son, Shem, was born about 502 years of age. So people speculate, including Bullinger, that was about 501 years old when Ham was born. Well, if one son was born when he's 500 and one was born in 502, and the middle son, where would he have been born? How about 501? You know, that's just a logical guess. We don't really know about that. But that's not the critical part of the story, and I'm trying to get to. I'm just telling you, Noah really did a wonderful job in his life. Now, verse 22 of chapter 10. Sons of Shem were Elam, Asher, Arphaxad, Lud, and Aram. Now, you got to understand, they had boys, six, I think, here. And one of his sons, Ham, had four sons. And I forgot how many sons, I think it was seven, that the other boy had. But no daughters mentioned. These guys really only had male children? The women only had male children? No. The odds are they had just as many girls as they had boys, because the population of this world is pretty much divided 50% male, 50% female. And besides that, where would Shem, Ham, and Japheth gotten their wives if there weren't any girls? Think about it for a second. Think about Cain and Abel. Where did they get their wives? Well, you know, it was their sisters. Shem, Ham, and Japheth, three boys, no daughters. Where did they get their wives? Had to be from, well, those three came with wives through the ark, through the flood. But then they had boys and girls. But the boys and girls will probably, you see what I'm saying? It's probably even. But you can figure out how the population of the world would have grown, because that would have been, it was probably seven couples, and they produced children. If they produced seven children, and they then married their cousins or whatnot, you have a very rapid growth of population. And that we have to, well, really give a little consideration to, because it really caused a lot of problems. And why? Well, we'll get into that later on. Chapter 11. Now, this is the chapter that deals with the Tower of Babel. And I'm not going to go through that, but you know all the languages were confused. Verse 10 of chapter 11, these are the records of the generations of Shem. Shem was 100 years old, became the father of Arphaxad 2 years after the flood. And there's one boy. Will you go right down the Shem Arphaxad line, right in that same chapter? You get down the bottom there in verse 26. Terah lived 70 years and became the father of Abram, Nahor, and Haran. Ah, now we're getting into the life of Abraham. His father was Terah. And it says that Terah had his first son when he was 70 years of age. This is not unusual for these people to have their children way later in life. 70 years, you're just a kid at 70 years. Back then, he lived to be a lot older than that before he finally died. Terah, verse 27, became the father of Abram, Nahor, and Haran. Haran became a father of Lot. It doesn't mention anything about Nahor. In fact, it says an interesting thing in the next verse. Haran died in the presence of his father, of his father Teem, in the land of his birth, in Ur of the Chaldees. Well, now, where is Ur of the Chaldees? Well, you know, that's where all the Bible maps picture it, as being part of modern-day Iraq. So this is all the things that happen in this our day and age, and we read about all the times, are things that happen in the land that discussed very detailed in this book of Genesis. Verse 32, days of Terah were 205 years old, and he died in the city, by the way, of Haran. Was that city named after the child? Yeah, it was named after Abram's or Abram's brother. Why he picked that, I don't know. So the Lord said to Abram in verse chapter 12, this is now talking to Abram, this is his calling. Go forth from your country, from your relatives, and from your father's house to a land which I will show you. This is where he begins to migrate from Iraq, going up north and over, I should be saying west, going west over to, I'm not sure where west is, forgive me. But in any case, he goes over, up, and then down into the Palestine area. And he talks about the blessings and the cursings that would occur to him. And then verse 4, Abram, still named Abram, not Abraham yet, went forth, the Lord had spoken to him, and Lot with him. He took his that would be his nephew, Lot. Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. Now, how would you like to be 75 years old and take a little small jaunt of a couple hundred miles by foot? No trains, no buses, no cars, just on, maybe with camels to carry all the goods, and go this. I'll do it the way I think it would. Way up over top of mountains there and down into Palestine. What a job. He did when he was 75. Verse 7, the Lord appeared to Abram and said, well, to your relatives or descendants, I'm going to give you this land. Now, that was a promise that was greatly expanded as life went on, and the promises just continued to multiply. Verse 10, there was a famine in the land, so Abram went down to Egypt, sojourned there. Famine was severe even in the land. And, of course, this is where he told his first little fibby lie. I call it a fibby lie. It was a fib or a lie, a mistruth. It was a half-truth because Abraham said to his wife, Sarai, that was her name then, well, tell everybody that you're my sister, and they won't then pick me up and throw me in jail or kill me and take you. And, of course, here was Pharaoh, and Pharaoh had a harem, and he would have gone and taken her, and because she was a beautiful woman. She was 10 years younger than Abram, so she was 65 when this happened. He was 75, so she was 65. And she was a beautiful woman, so beautiful that the Pharaoh would have grabbed her up for his harem. So he said, well, you tell everybody you're my sister. That's actually true. You know, she was his half-sister. His half-sister. But he wanted to make sure he was... Now listen, Abraham was not born with faith. Faith is something you have to work with. You got to grow with. You got to pray about. And Abram made a lot of mistakes. Of course, he had a lot of trouble here in chapter 12. Pharaoh found out about it and said, well, what in the world's going on here? It says in verse 17, the Lord struck Pharaoh and his household with the great plagues because of Sarai, Abram's wife. So Pharaoh finally said, what in the world are you doing here? What are all these plagues? My harem, my wives, my midwives, my concubines, nobody can get pregnant. What have you done? Well, I'm afraid I may have told you a little story. She's my sister, all right, but she's my half-sister. Actually, she's my wife. So he had to back down on that. But out of that whole deal, God turned disaster into tremendous blessings. Pharaoh gave them all kinds of wealth and silver and gold and animals, but he said, kindly leave the country. And so Abram did. And Abram went from Egypt to the Negev. That is the desert area up north of Egypt. He and his wife and all that belonged to him and Lot with him. And of course, this is a story where they finally decide, well, I've got to start growing crops, and you've got a lot of animals there, Lot. I've got a lot of animals. What are we going to do? Well, we need to split up. And you take one way, I'll take the other. And Lot said, well, that sure looks like a beautiful land down there. It was. A lot of land down there, beautiful water. But unfortunately, there were a few bad people in that area. Sodom and Gomorrah were in that area. So Abram took the mountains and Lot took Sodom and Gomorrah. And that was a really bad land to go to. You had to really watch your P's and Q's, so to speak, or you're going to be covered with trouble. Moving along now, we cover that in chapter 13. Of course, in verses 14 through 18, there's tremendous blessings added to Abram. He moved his tent and came to dwell by the oaks of Mamre, verse 18 of chapter 13, which in Hebron, there he built an altar to the Lord. Now, wherever Abraham went, or Abram went, he built altars. He really worshiped God. Here was a guy who really was obedient. He made a few mistakes. He told a few half-truths. In fact, he made the same mistake a little bit later on with Abimelech. But then again, he hadn't learned all his lessons yet. He was being tried and tested. He had no children. He was 90 years old, or 90, or nearly 99 years old, and God said, I'm going to introduce this concept of circumcision. Here he was, Abram, 99 years old. He had one kid already by one of his concubines, whose name was Hagar. You remember that name? You've heard it before. They had a son called Ishmael. And he was really a handful. He was a troublemaker from the word go. He couldn't get along with his own family, his own brothers and sisters that came from his loins. You know, he married a woman, and then they had another Egyptian, by the way. And he was already half Egyptian, so there was a lot of Egyptian blood in this line. And then all their children, boys and girls, intermarried and had more children. And Abram, well, he had, they were his sons and his grandsons and his great-grandsons. They were part of his progeny. And Abraham never forgot his progeny, even though Ishmael came along and he lived out in the desert. Abram said, I'm going to give him all this land. Well, that's sure a lot of sand. Yeah, with tons of oil beneath it. Biggest oil country in the world was given to Ishmael. We've got it in Iraq and Iran and Saudi Arabia. All those areas not covered with oil, but oil underneath. And this is all part of Abraham's blessings that he passed on to Ishmael. But also he had sons. He had Isaac. Now, what about Isaac? Here he was, 99 years old, and had to have circumcision. He had to be circumcised at 99 years of age. Ouch! Ishmael, he was about 13 then, had to be circumcised. They all willingly did it. I don't know whether I can use the word willingly that usually, but they did it. And then Abraham turns 100, and he finds out that Sarai, or Sarah, as her name has changed by now, 90 years old, is pregnant and about ready to produce a child. 90 years old, ladies. That's an old, old woman to have a child. I don't know how she did it myself. It had to be through a miracle from God. He was able to suspend the laws and just let her get pregnant. She waited a long time to have her first child. Now, I'm going to break this up right now by letting you turn over or look at your notes, and we'll cover some of the things we covered already. I just want to review it so we see where we stand. You see at 0 a.m., Anno Mundi, the recreation. A.m. means Anno Mundi, or year of the earth, I call it. Recreation. I call it recreation because I think there was a creation long before this, but then again, that's because I'm believing a double creation, you know, the creation of this earth, but I believe that there was things alive before the recreation. Birth of Noah, 1056. Find that out by just reading the verses and adding all the figures. Nobody disagrees with that. Construction of the ark, beginning in 1536. That's when he was 480 years old. No kids yet. 556 a.m., first son Japheth born to Noah. 1556. That would make him about 100 years, Noah about 100 years old. Son Ham born to Noah? Question mark. Because I can't really dogmatically state that it was 1 year later in 1557. But it does seem to indicate that's true because the son Shem, the youngest son born to Noah, was born in 1558. So there was a space of 2 years between the two boys, and logically, Ham was born in between that. 1656, Noah's flood occurred. Noah was 600 years old. And then I mention in here 1757, now that was after Noah's flood, that Peleg was born. Why do I put that in there? I put in his when he was born and when he died in 1936, but somewhere in between there's the Tower of Babel. I don't know when that is. I'm still working on that chronology. I've got an idea. I think I can even prove it, but I'm working hard on that right now. I've gone all the way up through the book of Judges, but I've got to backtrack because by now that we've had three dynasties of Egypt who have lived and died, and I've got to figure out when they occurred. Because when they began by the first pharaoh, who happened to be Cush, and that's a really amazing thing for people to realize, because Cush was a son of Ham, who was a son of Noah. So this is the grandson. And along comes this guy to be the king over the southern part of the world in Egypt, the pharaoh. And then he has his Tower of Babel. And he didn't have that until he'd been in rule and running the show, so to speak, down there in Egypt for 60 years. So, you know, I could just go back and figure, well, I guess about the time that Cush began to reign was after he came through this terrible flood and trouble, and he had sons and grandsons, and Peleg was one of them, and is a prophecy. Well, Peleg, in Peleg's life, and if I can find that verse, I will turn to it. You know, where in the world is that? Peleg, probably up here. I probably have it in my notes, but I just don't know where it is. Probably up towards chapter 11. But anyhow, we're not going to worry about that right now. You can look up there. There is a place in the Bible that talks about the Tower of Babel, and all the languages were confused, confounded, changed, so nobody could work together unless you can speak multiple languages, because everybody spoke different languages. Well, groups spoke different languages. And the only way that you can get anybody to listen, you could say, well, was tun sie? You know, you could speak out in German or Spanish. Que hace usted? You know, what are you doing? What are you making? And people finally realized, I've got to go over there and speak with those people. They speak my language. And that caused them to separate and migrate throughout the whole world. That was the Tower of Babel. It only lasted for 2 years because it took only 2 years before God said, let's go down and see what the sons of men are doing. And I don't like what they're doing. Let's confuse their languages. And how else can you explain so many people migrating over the earth at the same time, all speaking different languages, except their languages were confounded? That's what the Bible says in chapter 11. Confused. That was the Tower of Babel. And sometime in Peleg's life that occurred. I haven't figured that out yet, but I'm working on it. I do have Terah born, 1878. Because there again, you just add up all the years, the various chapters, in chapter 11, chapter 5, you just add up all the years. 1948, first three sons born to Terah when he's 70 years of age. We just read that a minute ago. By the way, he didn't have triplets when he was seven. He had, that was the first of the three sons. It doesn't say when the other two were born. You have to figure it out. Well, you can figure it out. Noah died in 206. It's interesting. He died before Abraham was even born. Because Abraham was born when at 2008 AM. You have that there in your chart, too. And I give you all the scriptures for that. Sarah is 10 years old, younger than Abram. She was born in 2018 when Abraham was 10. Well, it says in the Bible that she was born when he was 10 years of age, or I don't know exactly how it words it, but it's very clear. Now, the next thing is a question mark. And you will find this in Dr. Herman Hayes, Volume 2. Not in Volume 1, Volume 2. When it tells about Abraham taking a concubine called, named Susanna. You don't read that in the Bible anywhere. And they had a son, Achim. And then Abraham returned to the area where he lived, in Iraq, and he went with his wife that over to Palestine. So I put that with a question mark. That's in Dr. Hayes' Compendium, Volume 2, page 28. But I don't find any proof in the Bible. Now, wait a minute. I do find a little exception that might make that a possibility. I want to take this verse to you and read it. Chapter 25, verses 5 and 6. Let's turn there. Read that. See if you catch a little clue there. I mean, I poured over this. I don't know how many times I've read this. I never noticed it before. But, fortunately, Dr. Hayes had some chronology. I don't know where he got this chronology from, of Abraham having a wife or a concubine, Susanna, and a son, Achim. Now, he happens to be the guy that was sort of the progeny of the leader of, or the father of, all the royals in Europe. So this is a very important line. Not much is said about it in the Bible. Now, maybe Moses didn't know about this because he was concentrating on what was happening in Palestine. So I think, well, that's a possibility. Let's look at verses 5 and 6 of chapter 25. Now, Abraham gave all that he had to Isaac. Now, this is after he married his second wife. In the first verse there, Abraham took another wife whose name was Keturah. Now, why do I say that was a wife and that was a legitimate wife? Because Sarah had died. So this was a legitimate wife. He married a woman. He was free to marry. And it says he married this woman when he was probably around 150 years of age, and he lived to 175. That's a long time to live, by the way, 175. He had a whole bunch of children by this woman. And a lot of those people are very significant players in the pictures of today. And you can follow those people. It's interesting to do so. But when Keturah came along and produced all these children, Abraham said, no, I want all my possessions to go to Isaac and to Ishmael. And these children are going to be excluded. He said that right here. He gave all that he had to Isaac. That's interesting. Now the next verse is very important. But to the sons of his concubines, who are they? Abraham gave gifts while he was still living, and he sent them away from the son of Isaac eastward to the land of the east. Did you notice anything usual about that verse? No, you probably didn't unless you concentrate on it. But let me amplify it. To the sons of his concubines, plural. Who in the world were his other concubines? I knew about Hagar, but who was his other concubine that make it plural? So here's a little bit of an entry into a possibility for Susanna. Another concubine that he had way, way, way back. Remember, Sarah couldn't have any children till she was 90 years of age. And you know the pressure of all people in that back then, the women, was to have children. And so it's a possibility, and I don't really know. And I would really like to find out a little bit more about Susanna and when, what kind of a prophecy in the Bible would foretell that or would prove that it's true. But anyhow, this is for you to look at. So you look at chapter 25, verses 5 and 6, and you figure it out. But this does make it possible for the Susanna to be another concubine of the son Achim. Or you look at Dr. Herman Hayes, volume 2, and read all about it there. He leaves Haran in 2083 after his father's death. Father died at 205 years of age. It tells that in the Bible. Abraham is 75. We just read that a second ago. Chapter 12. Goes to Egypt. He meets the fourth, and I have a question mark there too because I don't know, but the fourth pharaoh of the Theban dynasty 11, whose name was Habhi-Petri, if you can pronounce that. One thing about Egyptians, pharaohs, they had long names, and it's hard to really to pronounce them. Mentuhapti, compendium, page 86. He was probably the pharaoh that was took Sarah and was going to try to make her part of his concubine. All of a sudden, the guy got, his wives all got sick, and they couldn't have any children at all, and they plagued, it says in the Bible. Then in 2087, we have the run-in with Amraphel. He was killed by Abraham's army. Abraham was 79, according to Herman Hay. All I can say is he was somewhere between age 75, chapter 12, verses 1 through 4, and 86 when he had this child, Ishmael. But that's, if Herman Hay figured it out at 79? Okay, that's a pretty good guess. It's somewhere between 75 and when he had 86 when he had Ishmael. And then in verse in 2094, Abraham takes a concubine Hagar. We've talked about right, has son Ishmael. And 2107, Abraham's 99th year, and this is the time the covenant of circumcision. And I give you all the scriptures on that. Turning the page over. Finally, in 2108, Isaac was born when Abraham was 100 years old. You find that in Genesis chapter 21, verses 3 to 5. And I'm going to turn back there and read that in case you think I've been pulling wool over your eyes. Abraham called the name of his son who was born to him, whom Sarah bore to him, Isaac. Abraham circumcised his son Isaac when he was 8 days old, as God had commanded him. Now Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born to him. And that's all part of the chronology I have in the second page. 2145, the second plate line there, Sarah died at age 127. That's pretty good. Abraham would have been 137 at that time. Isaac would have been 37. That was the child. He loved Isaac. He really wanted to help Isaac. He really didn't have that much to say about Ishmael, and that was a problem that is festering in this world today. But unfortunately, that's the way things happened. 2148 a.m., Isaac is 40 years old. He marries Rebekah. That's a very interesting story. Finally, after 20 years of marriage, Isaac has a child, actually twin boys, Esau and Jacob. Esau's the older two, the boys. He was the one that should have got the birthright. But you know what happened. He blew it completely. He sold his birthright for a bowl of soup. And then later on, when the blessings were passed out, Isaac, at his mother's insistence, dressed himself up. And you know the story. It's a tremendous story. And finally got the blessings from his father. Because he was old and hard of hearing and hard of seeing and half blind. And he said, boy, your voice sounds like Jacob, but you got this hairy fur around your neck and you smell like Esau. And that fooled him enough to where he passed the blessings along to Jacob. And boy, Esau was fit to be tied. He was so angry about that. Don't you have any blessings left for me, Dad? Oh, sorry. Yeah, they all went to Jacob. And away from you are all the blessings. You're not going to have any good land. You're going to always be helping other people. And if it is true, and there is some speculation that he finally settled in Turkey. That's not a very beautiful land in comparison to the United States, Great Britain, Canada, and South Africa. Is it? Very small. Well, that's where most of the rest of Israel lived. And that's beautiful. Just take this one country, United States or Canada, to the north. Beautiful people, beautiful land, beautiful people. And I hate to see this nation fall down because we have so much beauty around us. So many wonderful parks and things to see, some of which I have not seen yet in my days. I've seen a lot of them, and I'm going to try to see more. I lived in England for 3 years and traveled all around that. I know Scotland, I know Ireland, I know England, I know the Isle of Wight even. I've been down there. So I've seen a lot of the beauty of Israel, of Great Britain and the United States. But there's a lot more to do. So Esau and Jacob are born. And Abraham then, at what age? I'm not sure. It may have been when he was 500. Doesn't specifically state. He marries Keturah, has six more sons by her. And then he dies at age 175. That is very definitive. 2183. And then in 2288, to complete this chronology, Isaac dies at 180 years of age, just a little bit later, 5 years later than when Abraham died. So Abraham lived a long, wonderful life. And from him comes all this progeny and all these blessings, something that we should be very thankful for here in the United States, to have all these wonderful things. But now I want to take you back to just one more thing, conclude with this, chapter 22 of Genesis. Now, it doesn't say how old Isaac was when this happened, but he was probably a teenager or in his 20s. Doesn't give the age. You think of, oh, well, Isaac was a little teeny chomper, you know, I call him a little chomper, a little boy. No. He was a strong enough lad that he carried the wood on his shoulders. You know, think about that. You don't put a load of wood on a two-month-old or a six-month-old or a six-year-old kid. You can on a 22 or 23-year-old guy. Talk to him. He understands what's going on. So God tested Abraham, and this is a very important test. Said to him, Abraham, and he said, here I am. In other words, if God calls you and says so-and-so, well, you better listen. Better take note of it. Test it. See if it's true. Take now your son, your only son, whom you love, Isaac, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains which I'm going to tell you of or show you. Now that was something, you know, that we can, all you dads can think about that. You love your sons to pieces. And you would never want to take him out and turn him into a burnt offering. But Abraham's attitude was, okay, I'll understand a little bit later. I don't understand it now. Okay, so Abraham arose early in the morning and saddled his donkey and took two of his young men and Isaac his son and split wood for the burnt offering. Could have been initially carried on the donkeys, but it could have been also transferred when they went up the mountaintop to Isaac's shoulders. Verse 4, on the third day, so significant, it took 3 days to get Mount Moriah. What do you suppose Abraham was doing during those 3 days? Man, he was praying his heart out. He was trying to understand what God was trying to do with his son Isaac. He was his progeny, through whom all the promises were promised. You know, and Isaac didn't have any children yet. He was just a young lad. And he was going to have progeny as much as sand is on the seashore. That's what the Bible says. So on the third day, he raised his eyes. He saw way off in the distance there, and Abraham said to his young men, young guys, stay here with the donkey, and I and the lad will go yonder, notice this, and we, plural, will worship and return to you. He had enough faith to know that God's going to do something. I know I've got to offer him, but I know we're going to go up the mountaintop and we're going to come back down. I don't know how I'm going to do it yet. I don't know how God's going to do it. Don't you think that way about God lots of times in your offering of prayer. I don't know how you're going to ever do that. How are you going to heal all these people we talked about today? How are you going to strengthen the church? How are you going to get the message to the world? Those are the things we pray about all the time. We can't answer. We just have to have faith that indeed this is what's going to happen. So Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on Isaac, his son. Yeah, 50 pounds of wood. A little 6-year-old carrying that? Uh-uh. A 26-year-old? Maybe. I can understand that. And a knife, and the two of them walked on together. And Isaac spoke to Abraham, his father, and said, now this is an intelligent boy, a young lad, and he understood all about the laws of sacrificing. Took the knife, took the wood, laid it on Isaac's son's shoulder, took the fire, and the two of them walked on together. In verse 7, Isaac spoke to his father, and he said, my father. And he said, here I am, my son. He said, behold the wood and the fire in the wood. Where is the lamb for the burnt offering? He had enough knowledge to know that they're supposed to have a lamb there in that, but there wasn't anything. And what was Abraham going to do? Abraham said, well, God's going to provide. So they came to the place where the Lord had told him, and Abraham built the altar there, arranged the wood, and bound his son Isaac. Now, if Isaac were a young man of 20 to 30 years of age, would he not have a little more strength than his father, who was 100 years old when he was born? He'd be 120 years old now. I think he would have more strength than a 120-year-old man if he wanted to resist. And say, you're not going to tie my arms. You're not going to offer me on the burnt offering. He didn't do that. He willingly got up on that pile of wood, crossed his arms, had them tied, and laid on the wood there waiting to be sacrificed. I don't know what kind of faith this took. There is so much faith in this story that I find it very hard to ever think about any faith other than the sacrifice of Jesus Christ himself, what he had to go through, what kind of trust he had to have in his father to save him in this terrible time. Abraham stretched out his hand, took the knife. You know, that was going to be like a lamb killed. He was going to slit his throat. He wasn't going to plunge the knife in his body. That's not the way they killed animals. They slit their throats. They didn't even know that their throat had been slit. All of a sudden, they just lost all this blood, and they got very weak, and they just went to sleep and died. So the angel Lord called to him, Abraham, Abraham, stop what you're doing. I can trust in you completely. Then if you look at that, what happened in verses 8, this is where I'm ending this lecture, so I hope I'm with my time limit. I may have blown it already. He said, behold, I have sworn and declares the Lord, because you have done this thing and you have not withheld your son, your only son. Now remember, that was the father of all the sons of Jacob, one of whom was Judah, who was the father of Jesus Christ. If he had been killed, there would have been no Christ, or God would have to do it all over again, or some other way, and I don't know. But that wasn't going to happen. In your seed, verse 18, including Jesus Christ, all the nations of the earth shall be blessed because you've obeyed my voice. So I wish we had that much faith in God's church today. We have some faith, but God is not putting us through that kind of trial. Now, I'm not saying we're not going to have trials in the future. Maybe something as dramatic as what happened to ancient Abraham. It's going to happen to us one of these days, because we don't know what's going to happen. But whatever it is, you guys have to have faith in God that he's going to straighten out, he's going to give you the right answers, he's going to let you do the right thing always. So please, have trust and faith in Almighty God. I'm not asking for trust and faith that Abraham had, because that just seems impossible. I don't know how I could ever have that. I'd never want to have God come to me and say, well, Ben Chapman, I want you to sacrifice your son Benjamin. I could not do it. I don't have that much faith. Besides, I don't know what good it would do. I love my sons, Richard, stepson, but he's still part of my family. But my son Benjamin is really my firstborn boy. My wife's and my firstborn boy. I have two firstborn girls, and they're really, firstborn girls are really nice. I love them both. But you know, just because we love people doesn't mean we're going to have faith. Faith is something that supersedes all the love we have, and it only comes through Jesus Christ. So please, brethren, have faith.